You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Time to wait for someone to finish building a fence. I mean, come on, it's called Fences.
Yeah.
And let's face it, there's only one actual fence in the movie.
There. Well, you know what they say, those people are lazy. Fucking actors.
I was like, oh god.
That's one thing I was confused about. So the fence was like on the left side of the house, but they kept going around the right side.
Yeah, why was
that? Yeah, I never really understood.
The geography of the fence is kind of like,
it's more of a metaphor than an actual thing of use.
Wait, is that what we were supposed to be reading this movie as?
Keep people in.
Now I need to go back and watch it again.
Yes.
It was actually funny talking to Martin about this, because I was watching this and I knew his relationship with his dad was troubled, as he's made a big point of saying on multiple podcasts. And I was like, Martin, this is either going to be one of his favorite movies of the year or it's going to trigger him so goddamn hard.
Cut to the bone.
And he was like, yeah, if I'd seen this 10 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to finish watching it. But now it's one of my favorite movies of the year.
Oh, all right.
Denzel Washington here plays Martin's dad.
he plays a lot of black guys. He plays a lot of dads.
Yeah,
Martin liked it, but he did rope a baseball to a tree in his backyard, and he's just hitting it. He hasn't stopped hitting it since.
He plays Troy. No, not Martin. Denzel Washington. Troy Maxson. By the way, he's also directing this thing based on a very well-known August Wilson play. A long. Apparently long gestating project.
Yeah. No, he's been wanting to do a number of August Wilson plays, and I think, you know, he picked this one because this was one of the most well-known. It's kind of the African-American take on Death of a Salesman.
Absolutely.
In many ways.
Did he have anything to do with when he started it on Broadway? Did he have anything to do with bringing that to the stage, or was that already a thing that he just joined?
I didn't even know he played it on Broadway.
Yeah, they both did.
Yeah, I imagine that you know, it was because that's something that gets brought back a lot. You know, it's like, you know, every couple of years there's a new version of The Crucible or Death of Sales.
One of which you started.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, but even the, like, Broadway will do, you know, like in 2007, they did a version with Liam Neeson. They just did another version, like, very recently. Yeah.
Hmm.
It's like, yeah, every generation, somebody's like, I want to, you know,
I can't be the only person who's picturing him play his character from Taken in there. I'm not making the joke though.
But yeah, this has been in the pipe for him for a while.
Oh,
and now it's going up, and he's apparently going to attempt to do a number of other August Wilsons. Like, he has the rights to them.
And this is one in a series of, like, the African American experience by decade.
Yeah,
like he did, you know, once every 10 years. But why don't you, Bo, go ahead and give the plot description of this one.
So you have, Denzel's character, Troy. This takes place in the '50s, and he has more or less kind of achieved the middle class after, you know, or the black middle class, to the extent that he's working as a garbage man, has a regular job, pays fairly well, got a house, got furniture in it. He's got what seems to be, by other people's accounts and his own account, a very happy marriage to Viola Davis's character. He has one child by that marriage. He's got another child by another marriage. Kind of had a rough past, did some time, got out and, you know, swore that he was never going to do that again. His first wife left him while he was in prison, and he's got a child by that marriage, who is now an adult, and he's kind of trying to make it as a musician. His son is a high school athlete, and he's actually being scouted by talent scouts. But Denzel's character, one of the things that he did after he got out of prison was he played in the Negro Leagues as a baseball player, and he was very, very good. And in fact, like, at his best, he was doing better than, you know, white people are doing now in the '50s. And there's a lot of bitterness on his side from that because, you know, he was, you know, once Jackie Robinson, got over the color barrier, he was a little too old to be in the show. Mm-hmm. So, There's a lot of residual bitterness for that. You know, by all accounts, you're at the beginning of this, he seems to have it well together. You know, he's you know, got a best friend, marriage is happy, everything's stable. He, you know, likes to drink on Fridays when he gets paid.
Yeah,
a little
the bottle,
bit, you know,
the has, flask of gin.
Yeah, has a pint of gin, splits a pint of gin.
Which sounds repulsive, let me just say.
You know, but, you know, this is a typical middle-class existence of the 50s, you know, a little bit lower middle class because it's a black neighborhood.
But, they hadn't invented whiskey yet.
Yes. And they had only barely invented civil rights. So there starts to be some friction with his son, because his son is like, I just want to go to college, and this football thing is my ticket in. And he's like, no bullshit, you're going to work your job that you have at the NP, and you're going to go to school, and that's it. You don't have time for this nonsense, because white people will never give you a chance.
Yeah,
this,
lower your expectations.
Yeah, this is not a fucking shot. And he says the same thing, you know, pretty much the same thing to his other son when he's trying to pursue a jazz, you know, his career as a jazz musician. He's like, you're out of your mind.
I'm not interested in it. Even when his son's like, you know, doing okay, and like, Dad, this is a big place I'm playing. Won't you come see me? He's like, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole thing. Is this is a guy who, once he's made up his mind on something, that's it. End of story.
Yeah.
Even when it, you know, I mean, like, he holds everybody to such incredibly high standards, and yet, as it goes along, we find he doesn't hold himself to those high standards, yet he's willing to defend his bad decisions.
Right.
Well,
he's resentful. He doesn't want to admit to he's resentful. He wants to just, he disguises that, sort of giving them a dose of reality.
Sure, and in a way, he's kind of doing the opposite. Like, a lot of parents will, they will put their dreams onto their kids, and like, you know, sometimes try to propel them towards things that they don't want to do. In this, it's almost the opposite, where he is like, you know, his kid actually has a chance to live his dream. And he's like, no, that's, you know, I'm not going to let you be disappointed. And yeah, there's definitely an element of like, you know, if I have to be here, then everybody else has to be here.
If not me, then nobody.
Yeah, and that's what the fence is a metaphor. It's not to keep things out. It's to keep things in. It's to keep things contained.
Which, if that wasn't clear, they actually explained that.
Yeah. And, he you know, as it turns out, he has a brother who fought in the war and came back with a head injury. He's got a plate in his, and he basically, you know, he has, you know, schizophrenic episodes, you know, mental disorders.
Which I thought one of the, you know, a film filled with great performances.
Yeah.
He was a really strong performance.
He did a very good performance. But it turns out that he took the money that he was given for, you know, serving his country and being injured in the line of duty, and kind of parlayed that. And that's the reason that he has the house that he has, and he has the stable life he has. Whereas, and to his credit, his brother was living with him, and he is not a guy who, you know, can really take care of himself. But then his brother was like, no, I want to live on my own. And so, you know, he kind of walks, you know, he's got an apartment, but he walks the streets a lot. And because of his particular disorders, he gets into a lot of trouble. And so Denzel's character, Troy, is constantly having to bail him out.
Well, let's face it. This movie, Denzel Washington is the center of this whole film. Mm-hmm. Everything else is the shadows that come from his behavior and his actions and his choices in this thing. And Denzel plays it as big as he did his character in Training Day. I mean, it's huge. In fact, I heard some degree of criticism about the way that he played it.
Well,
James Earl Jones apparently chose to play it, like, where he won an award for it, was like, played a lot more restrained.
Because it's one of those things, like, as it first starts, like, I was aware that it came from a stage play, but as it's blocked throughout most of it takes place in the backyard. And so you could see how it was adapted from a play. They made it look almost exactly that way on screen. And almost all the dialogue is like very, almost every set of dialogue is almost a monologue from one
monologue
to the other.
Yeah, it's very theatrical. Yeah. In fact, there was one point where I was just like, maybe we're getting too far into, you know, metaphorical language here. And then somebody actually tells characters like, dude, you're full of shit. You're like, okay. It's like, you need something like that.
In a way.
Well, but it's a very, the presentation is extremely theatrical.
Yeah, it's hard to really like celebrate the way this is made.
Yeah.
It's everything that about it that's good was like equally good from the stage play or these yeah. some of these mm-hmm. actors who played these roles before.
I don't think Denzel Washington is a bad director by any stretch of imagination, but he's not good enough to really present this in any way other than this theatrical bit.
Yeah, the material can only be opened up so much. Yeah, sure. You know, and
I feel like his reasoning is more just, well, this is, will give more people an opportunity to see this than they would otherwise. Or less so than, wow, wouldn't this make a great translation into a film?
And I think, you know, I think his acting choices here are perfect because it's not James Earl Jones doing this. It's Denzel Washington. Mm-hmm. And Denzel Washington, you know, is still a very good-looking man, was, you know, a major, major sex symbol. And in this, he kind of turns this into a performance of a guy who, you know, had this, you know, very masculine presence that is kind of...
The glory days are over.
It's going to pot, and there's some, you know, really, you know, good scenes with him, like, in his underwear, where he's like, you know, you can see his pot belly, and he's kind of going to hell, and, you know, which I'm sure Denzel Washington does not have carry around much in real life. But yeah, it's like, you know, you can see that it's just like, he's going to seed a little bit, and that plays into one of the major conflicts of the story, of, you know, his, you know, vitality and why he is constantly coming to head and eventually even to his wife, who is generally very supportive of him. Mm-hmm. And definitely, like, he's always playing, you know, it is the bull game with his kids, where he is like, no, this is my house, my rules, mm-hmm. you don't play against. And, you know, to his son who's not living with him, he's just like, well, the only fucking time you ever come to see me is when you're looking for money.
So yeah. Yeah. And even
and
if
you married a Bigfoot.
Yeah. So.
My goddamn house.
Yeah. And even if he would have played it more subdued, like that's not what people would have expected out of Denzel.
No, of course
that's
not.
Not what anybody would have wanted.
I was not noting that I think one choice is better than the other, just that I know there was some contention about that.
You've got to have the crazy Denzel laugh in all of his movies.
Picture a different version of this character, though. This character is larger than life, and he is very explosive. And I'm interested to see how James Earl Jones would have approached this character.
Right? Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they're, like, you might even be able to YouTube some of the productions.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. You know, maybe playing it more, where more restrained, and that way his... when he does explode, it's that more violent seeming. Uh-huh. Because Denzel here is always at a 10. You know, you know, he's always there.
Yeah. There's a little
what he's talking about.
He wavers, like, you know, he runs about an 8, and then you know, the more gin you pour on him, he'll ramp up to the 10.
Yeah, and a lot of this is just him and his buddies sitting around drinking and talking
him
shit.
And
there's so much. I mean, at 2 hours and 12 minutes, this doesn't even feel long. At least it didn't to me, because the script is so great and the acting is so good. Viola Davis is wonderful in this. I remember when we just saw the trailer for this, we were like, just give her the Oscar.
You know, right there. She really, they both knock it out of the park. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just like, you know, you don't have to be restrained to turn in a good performance. Mm-hmm. And this is definitely one. And Viola Davis is just, I mean... If you want restraint, there you go.
Well, Bo, why don't you go into your final thoughts? Frank, you can finish.
No, sorry. I was going to say, though, looking at the two of them, though, in terms of performances, I thought they both, I agree. They both knocked off out of the park, though. But the difference for me between the two of them was I could tell he'd done this on Broadway. I could tell he'd done this a number of times. But I just, maybe this is just more a compliment for her, but she just made this seem so fresh and so alive and so, like this was, you know, the first time that she was playing this woman and, you know, emoting these thoughts and crying and this snot. And this is just like, seems so fresh. And it does not feel like she just, you know, like this came from Broadway. And when she was on the screen, it felt like so fresh and real.
Like there was more of she was more prepared for the translation to film than he was with this part.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't often find myself asking the question of like, Whenever I see someone get super emotional on screen, I never find myself asking, like, where did they take themselves to reach that? I always just assume, because actors are trained and they can get there, but that's like, that's one of the first times in my
dog
life where
dying.
I was just like...
Dog dying every time.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just like, how did she do that?
Doesn't even have to be your dog. You can just think about Old Yeller.
I definitely, you know, this is a set piece of the modern American theater. It's... You know, August Wilson is a pillar of the modern American theater. And, you know, maybe to Denzel's credit, he realizes that, like, there's no need to get squirrely with this. Just you know, set it, do the scene, let the language and the characters carry it, and that works. I mean, there's one or two moments that I thought they did a musical jab here and there, or that they did not need. And so, if anything, it's when he does try to get more movie-ish than theatrical with this that I think it falls a little. But for the most part, he really does a good job of carrying those scenes and letting them live where they need to live. The acting is incredible. There really isn't, you know, from Denzel Washington down to the you know, youngest actor in this, everybody puts in just solid performances. If Viola Davis doesn't get a fucking Oscar nod for this, then they need to burn the Academy to the ground. There's just no question that things have gone too far. I give it a solid 9 foreboding baseball bats in the yard out of 10.
Frank.
Yeah, I mean, you can say that this is the type of material that are, you know, text that was not meant for the screen. And Denzel Washington isn't the strongest director. He's a good director, but isn't the strongest director. But he does direct this as best as it can be directed. That being said, you know, it's an incredibly enriching performance. Piece. There's so much here in terms of the drama, in terms of just great dialogue and great actors, you know, saying this great dialogue. You know, this is the kind of film that you can definitely get lost in. You will cry. You will smile. And it all comes, and none of it's ever saccharine. It's all incredibly organic, and that's the kind of, you know, there's no emotions being thrown at you here, which is really hard to find. You know, you'd be hard pressed to find a better drama right now, at the movies, even though this, you know, isn't, nothing of this feels like it should be a movie. Yeah. Completely solid. I agree. So I think I'm going to give this 8.5 pints of gin, which ached to watch because I'm still sleeping off my hangover from the party I went to last night.
JC?
Yeah, I didn't fully know what to expect out of this one other than I had actually felt like I'd heard some whispers that it wasn't maybe as good other than Viola Davis's performance. And so that maybe tempered my expectations a little bit, but no, I really enjoyed this. I agreed with what Frank said about you'll get lost in it. It's based on a stage play and it's filmed that way, so it's not a very cinematic movie, and so you can sort of feel kind of claustrophobic at times, kind of like you're fenced in, with just the way it's filmed, and especially a movie being this long, like that to me is a recipe for not a very good time in the theater. But with this one, you could feel the audience I was with wrapped up in it. It would have fallen apart if any of the performances were bad. It's almost fitting how, like, this week we saw Passengers, which is driven by two performances, and this one is driven by two performances, and it shows how much further a good script can take a movie. Because the performances weren't necessarily bad. They just didn't have anything to work off of. And this, it was a combination of great performances with great dialogue to work off of. And so, yeah, that's obviously a recipe for success. Dug it a lot more than I thought I would. I would give it 8 out of 10 baseball careers that would have been from the Negro Leagues.
Yeah, I'm really only giving this points off because as I watch it, I'm like, I really feel like this would have been more effective to watch it with theatrical staging, to actually watch it sitting in front of you the way it was written. Like, there are points in this movie you're like, well, that was mildly awkward. And there were points where he was trying to go, well, now I'm going to try and do something cinematic, and it just feels out of place. But there's certainly nothing to complain about the script or the acting, which are all absolutely top-notch here. This is definitely something everybody should see in one form or another. I give it 8.5 out of 10 times. I'm going to go back and rewind it just so I can watch him go, man, fuck Jackie Robinson!